Music matters. Mm-mm. No. Music matters. Oh, that's worse. Music matters.
Welcome to Music Matters Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Emily Williams-Birch, and you've tuned in to a repertoire exploration episode. These episodes take a really deep dive into the music that we program and sing as choir people. Sometimes we look at a particular composer and some of their works. Sometimes we look at certain age demographics, but today is extra special. We're talking to one of my dear friends who specializes in music by Black composers. I saw his presentation on this topic. It was called Non-Idiomatic Music of Black People. I saw his presentation on this for the first time last fall at NCCO, the National Collegiate Choir Organization. And I went into the session very excited to learn some new pieces and some new composers to me, and realized that there was a world of repertoire that I just had never been exposed to or didn't know that I needed to know more about. So this conversation with Marcus Garrett, Dr. Marcus L.A. Garrett, started as me wanting to better understand this amazing repertoire that we have at our fingertips that isn't often planned. In case you don't know, not all music by Black people is a gospel or a spiritual. In fact, there is some excellent music out there. Not that those aren't excellent, I love those too. But there are compositions by Black composers that kind of sound like Mozart and have a little bit of that Brahmsian flair to them. Now, I'm not a specialist, but Dr. Garrett is. So in this episode, we talk about how he got interested in this research topic and where his incredible database that is ever-growing of non-idiomatic Black composers and their pieces came from. It is my hope that this conversation will open your eyes to a whole new world of music. I know that some of us program based on themes, and sometimes we program intentionally to feature female composers or certain composers from different regions. I know that I have been diving into this database and I'm so excited about what we're finding. So, if this is new to you, welcome. There's a lot to learn and a ton to listen to. If it's not, welcome to your refresher course. I sincerely appreciate that you're listening, and I hope you enjoy this conversation with Dr. Marcus L.A. Garrett on the non-idiomatic music of Black composers. Welcome to Music Matters Podcast. I am sitting here looking at one of my favorite people, Marcus L.A. Garrett. What's up, Dr. Garrett?
Oh, excuse me, Dr. Burke. So, you know, we talk so much already about the food that we make, and so I've been eating the granola that I made, and some of that is down my throat now, but it tastes good, so that's good. The most important part. I'm not going to die. That's why I have water in it.
You sip water. I'll tell the listeners that you and I are planning to go live on Instagram and do a show of us cooking, because Marcus follows the directions and I don't.
Yeah. So then we'll see.
That'll be fun.
Whose food looks better?
I'm guessing yours will. I mean, I saw your short ribs last week. These are vegan, by the way. Anyway, back to topic. Who are you? For people who are listening that do not know you, give us your elevator pitch.
Oh, wow. It's so hard. I hate talking about myself like that. But I teach music and choir at the University of Nebraska, Lincoln. Just finished my second year. In addition to being an educator and a conductor, I also enjoy the opportunity to sing. So I've been singing with Festival Singers of Florida, with Kevin Fenton, and a bunch of FSU people. And also, I sing in three of the choirs at First Plymouth Congregational Church here in Lincoln with Tom Trenning. And I also enjoy being able to write music every now and then.
Write, you teach, you conduct, you sing. You sing with Tom Trenning, you sing with Kevin Fenton. What's your voice part?
Usually, well, it depends. With festival singers, I sing bass too, just because I sang bass too with university singers when I was there. I mean, I'm not really a bass too. I prefer, oh wow, prefer singing baritone.
Active the vegan granola.
Oh goodness. And like this, this has never happened. It's never happened.
It's so funny.
This is great. This is great. I'm okay, people. I am okay, I promise.
Vegan granola. The vegan granola killed you. Oh, I love talking with you. Okay. So you normally sing bass too, but you prefer baritone.
Yes. But every now and then, if say with one of the choirs, at First Plymouth, we only do early music, mm-hmm. like high Renaissance and maybe some early Baroque. And sometimes there might be three treble parts and only two tenor bass parts. So sometimes Tom will have me sing alto too.
Oh, praise. My favorite countertenor ever. I had a gay men's chorus in Columbia, and my bass two section leader ended up singing the lead in Dancing Queen, like, it was my favorite moment of the whole concert because he's been singing all the bass lines and then just breaks out. I love the way when you sing in that timbre, that color. That's beautiful.
It's so different. So I have, excuse me, a funny story. When I taught in Pennsylvania, we were on tour and I had two first sopranos. We did Whitaker's Luxorum Quay. Mm-hmm. Which, if you're familiar with the piece, at the end, it has three soprano parts. Well, what happened was during tour, my strongest or my most dependable first soprano lost her voice. And she was supposed to do the solo part at the beginning, and then she and the other first soprano were the ones who held that G sharp at the end. Well, I'm getting ready. I'm like, okay, this is the song that's next. And I was like, because I knew she had saved her voice. And I was like, are you going to be able to do it? And she's looking like, no. And then she's like, let G-Mar do it. And I'm like, okay. But I wasn't thinking about the stagger breathing that had to happen at the end. So I was just like, you know what? Whatever happens, happens. So we get to it. And G-Mar sings that, and if the video was still on YouTube, you could see my head like drop because I was just, I was in complete utter shock because I didn't know she could do it like that. Well, we get to the end of the song and I'm like, okay, I don't hear any break in the sound, but I know Janina's not singing because I'm looking at her and I know she's not singing. Why did one of my bass twos, because you know, you have the cop nude. So he goes down to like, he sings the low, like D sharp. Well, I think it might be a D sharp before it switches, to where the sopranos have to hold it. He jumps from that low note all the way up to the G sharp, and then he stagger breathes with her. Oh. And afterwards, I was just like, Christian, did you really do that? And he's like, yeah. And so for the rest of the semester, his roommate told me all the time, he would come in there and he would be practicing making that leap just to make sure he could do it if he ever needed to again. Wow. Bass twos are the best.
Bass twos, okay. Bass twos, mad respect. Yeah. I just like to sing all the high notes, but in my next life, I am going to be a bass. I'm going to be huge, like 6'4". I've already made a special request.
Okay.
All the low notes and be huge. I'm going to be massively tall. Oh my God.
That is coordinated.
Okay. That's a good story. So that's a perfect kickoff too into our repertoire selection process. This is a repertoire exploration episode, and I asked you on because your website, which I'll link in the episode notes, has an incredible database. What is special about the database of music on your website?
So this area of music that I've been calling the non-idiomatic choral music of Black composers is special because a lot of times when we think about Black composers or just Black musicians, Black music, we have something in mind a lot of times because most times we are used to hearing the genres that have been created by Black people. So spirituals, especially when it comes to choral music, you got spirituals, gospel, and even jazz. And when you get out of that, you start thinking about hip hop, blues, rap, R&B, rock and roll, all those kinds of things. But for many different reasons, depending on where you are in time, where you are in the country and that kind of stuff, the concert music of Black composers is very rarely promoted. Thankfully, we are in a time of an awakening, and people have understood that there is value in all of that. And so there are quite a few composers who have been commissioned to write things, whether it's dealing with a specific Black topic, like Damian Jeter recently wrote a Requiem, an African-American Requiem that was supposed to have been premiered, I think, last week in Oregon, but it's been postponed, I believe, till next year. But then you have composers like Carlos Simon, who just get commissioned to write for all of these university and professional orchestras. He's worked on some movie scores in his time, and he even had an opera, like I think it was a chamber opera, premiered with like Washington National Opera, maybe. And so you have people like that. But then even Damien Sneed has some operas. So, but I said all that to say that a lot of times, if a Black composer gets commissioned, it's typically to fill that niche that some people feel that only a Black musician can fill. Well, we too often have not seen where Black composers specifically have not been afforded the same opportunity as some of our white counterparts. Well, it's very rare that a white composer is commissioned to write a specific type of piece outside of maybe a theme or voicing and that kind of stuff, or like they're honoring someone. But I mean, you know, I've been commissioned to arrange spirituals, like Moses Hogan did, you know, during his life, like Stacey Gibbs continues to get, and that kind of stuff. And there's nothing wrong. We still need those. I mean, they're valuable. And I always say, you know, while I talk about this topic a lot, I do not want anybody to think that I feel that spirituals, gospel, and jazz, or rap, hip hop, R&B, all this stuff is less than the choral music. But we just need to make sure that people understand that this music exists. And when you look at a lot of choral literature courses, if you even get to talk about some of the these composers or this music, it typically will only be like one day,
right?
And that kind of stuff. And so, if you don't learn about it in a class, you probably won't even know that it exists for you to then even look for it, because you know, as you've heard many times, you don't know what you don't know.
Exactly. You don't know.
And so, I mean, I don't necessarily fault people for it, but I do say that if you now know about it, you then should be talking about it. Doesn't mean that you have to do all of these presentations. Don't try to do too many presentations. I like doing them. But, you know, have the conversations with people as people are talking about, you know, planning. I mean, right now, choral musicians and conductors understand that we have a lot of time on our hands to plan repertoire, to plan performances for when we will be able to have those full performances close to, if not exactly like we were used to. And so as we're thinking about all of that, you know, people think about themes. Right. And so some people will be thinking about, you know, the fact that we would not have been able to sing together for quite some time. And so in that, I mean, there are just so many things that you can consider. And even just yesterday, was having a chat with a white woman who was saying, well, I have all brown students, so how do I help them to understand what it's like? And I tell people all the time, as you're choosing this music, specifically with this non-idiomatic, because it doesn't sound quote unquote Black, people won't necessarily know what the person looks like, not that they need to, but we all are unique individuals. And so there's nothing wrong with celebrating our uniqueness, celebrating what makes us individuals. So for me, I'm Black. I have no problem with that. I love being Black. I want people to know that I'm Black. I just don't want people to judge me because I'm Black. Still treat me the same way, but just know that that is a part of me. And I am proud of it. So I'd say, you know, show people the pictures of the composers. Not only to your students, but also show it to your audience members so that they can understand. Because in this age of hypersensitivity, in this age of liberalism, wokeness, and all of that, we are now realizing that many of us have, all of us have a bias. We have biases, mm-hmm. different things. And when it comes down to music, I have had too many conversations where people think that music is going to sound a certain way because a particular person wrote it or because a particular group of people are going to perform it. So like when you think
that's
about
the conversation you and I had. Called you and I said, I'm conducting this piece. I'm so uncomfortable. Tell me what I need to know. And you said something very profound. I even wrote it really big on a sticky note that just be authentic. Be authentic to you. Be authentic to the people in front of you. And the music will come to life. There isn't a 100% right way. It's an authenticity. And it gave me such freedom.
Yeah. You know, I mean, and you want to be authentic to yourself, authentic as you can, as much as you can to the music. Sometimes people then think that that gives them the liberty to do whatever they want. I'm like, oh, no. Mm-mm. If you're going to study, like if we're talking specifically about spirituals, if you're going to study Bach, you're going to study performance practice for Brahms, you need to do the same with spirituals and that kind of stuff. But understanding yes. all music still has to live and breathe. So there are certain things that you are able to do. There will be some things that you just should not do. But, you know, just getting back to the non-idiomatic, it's been neglected by quite a few, by many, many groups and individuals because a lot of them just did not know about it. And as I've looked at some articles from like the Choral Journal from the 70s, where there were a few folks like Carl Harris and even Marvin Curtis, who talked about and Lee Cloud, I believe, was another, who said there is this classical choral art music that Black composers have written. Nobody just knows about it. We need to start talking more about it. We need to do more research. There have been plenty of dissertations. Jason Ferdinand even talked about it at the beginning of his, Jeff Ames as well. They just said that there is this music and we just don't have enough. There are almost no choral literature textbooks or resource books that even mention it. And the few that do give it a very,
very,
they give it very little into attention.
Your website gives a great starting point for someone listening that has no idea what we're talking about or where to even start. For people listening that don't know this music, they can go to your website, which I'll link below, and there is an entire list. Can we talk about a few of the people and maybe the pieces that you think would be good starting points for people who have time right now to start exploring this non-idiomatic music?
The database came as a result of the presentations that I've done. The first one was with Florida ACDA, and then I've done for a few other states and some regional and even national conferences. And with this quarantine, I've been able to talk to some classes even about it. And as I was getting my website together, I was just like, you know what, Marcus, you have this list that you give out to people. And then back in January, I mentioned something about it on Facebook and ended up emailing it to like individual, like 500 people, which was a lot of work. And then I was like, you know what? You should just go ahead and put this in a Google spreadsheet and attach it. Since your website is about to go live, go ahead and make that a separate page. So decided to put my research on my website. The database came from the list of repertoire that I had for all the conferences that I did on the different levels, and started adding pieces that I had in my personal, that I have in my personal library, whether they are physical scores or digital copies. And I have quite a few others that I have to go in and verify. There are some documents, some websites that have lists of music. And just based on the title, I'm like, well, that probably will fit because it doesn't sound like a spiritual, but without looking at it, I don't know, it might be a jazz piece and that kind of stuff. So I've got some time to go through quite a few other things on there. So for people who are interested in looking at this for the first time, I would say probably going with some music that they probably already know, but just didn't realize that it fits in with this. So many people know the name Victor Johnson. Mm-hmm. And there are still some people who don't even know that he's Black because his music doesn't sound Black. So, you know, I would say just start there with some of his music, because a lot of it, thankfully, is written for like middle school and the beginning high school ensembles. So it's very, I mean, it's so singable. It's easily sight readable. Very few chromatic tones that you have to worry about. And so you're able to use those in a functional way in addition to having a piece, you know, for a performance. And then there are some other composers that we know very well who have either a few or quite a few pieces. Some of those names are Rusefony Powell. Mm-hmm. The piece that I always keep in my back pocket is Non Nobis Domine. It's great to have a Latin setting by a Black woman. Mm-hmm. And that's one of those pieces that my colleague likes to call add water pieces. It's one that takes almost no time for you to teach because it has all of the layering with the ostinatos. There are really only three sections that you have to learn with that piece. And it's one that the choirs love, audiences love, and I just love to conduct it. It's just a really fun piece. So you have, you know, Non Nobis Domine, in addition to many other pieces that she has, but that's the one that I tend to highlight. Andre Thomas has a few pieces. One of my favorites is Fences. Can be a little more challenging, especially when it goes to the major mode towards the end. That can be a little bit more work, but it's definitely worth it. But his piece, I Dream a World, is another great one, you know, for another unity type piece, just like Fences. Jeff Ames, and his piece In Remembrance is one that everybody should know. But then he also has the Glory of Fanfare if you're looking for something big and festive. But then there are some of the composers who have passed, but kind of set the tone for what we do. Some of those include Samuel Coleridge Taylor. Mm-hmm. And he was actually, his nickname was like the African Mahler. Now, most of his pieces are written for bigger choirs, so those who have like community groups or college or university groups, be great pieces, because he really wrote for the average singer. He was not trying to write this music that was just like off the charts difficult. He does have one piece, the Leeshore, that I've seen so far, because I haven't been able to look at all of his music. And a lot of it is on IMSLP, and they've added a few things this year, and that made me so excited. But I even have on my website pieces. I believe I do pieces that are available like on IMSLP, so you can tell you. And I think I even put the links for those. So Samuel Coleridge Taylor.
You do. I'm looking at them. That's amazing.
Great. So you have that. Another one, R. Nathaniel Dett, who's my favorite composer. The thing about his music is that it's somewhat challenging when you try to put it into this non-idiomatic box because it doesn't really fit. He decided early on in his compositional career that he was going to take the Black folk songs, mostly spirituals, but there are other Black folk songs that we know of, but he decided to take those and use those as thematic material for anthems and motets. So it could be where he would take the melody with the text, but the way that he created all of the other parts, it was something else. Sometimes he would take the melody and all he did was just change the words. So he might use a hymn text, or he might create his own poetry, because he actually published a book of poetry in, I believe, 1914, or 1911, the album From the Heart. And he... he did quite a few different things, different ways of creating those anthems and motets, but using that folk material. You also have, going further back, now Dett was born in 1882 in Ontario. Samuel Coleridge Taylor was born in 1875 in Croydon, England. And Jose Mauricio Nunez Garcia was actually born in the late 1700s in Rio de Janeiro.
I love that you know these dates just off the, you are so fast. This is amazing.
I've been talking about these people for a little while now, so that repetition definitely helps.
It's so easy and conversational. I've taken like a million pages of notes already.
Nunez Garcia, who was called Padre because he was a priest, and he was actually the first musician of the Kingdom of Portugal. He, when the king and queen left Portugal for a little bit and came over to Brazil, they named him the first musician of the Kingdom of Portugal. It was like for 3 years. There was a little controversy because he wasn't 100% black, and so some people had a problem with that. But he was still that. He, all the pieces that I've seen of his, and I believe there are about 180 surviving choral works. Wow. They're all in Latin. Almost all of them have either full orchestra or some combination of instruments. He has three requiems, several mass settings, other like mass movements like credos or glorias, matins, antiphons, vespers, you name it, he has it. And his music sounds like anything that Haydn or Mozart would have written. Speaking of Mozart, he actually conducted the premiere of Mozart's Requiem in Brazil.
Really?
Yes. So, I mean, these are just some of the things, you know, it just lets you know the type of person that he was. But outside of Brazil, a lot of people don't really know about him. Now, there was a recording done within the last 10 years, I believe, with a university. I may have been in Texas, and this I have not talked about enough to remember.
That's okay.
But there was a university that did, they did like two of his big works. And it's stunning. I mean, when you listen to his Requiem, you can hear, even though I believe that he finished his Requiem before he conducted Mozart's, he probably was looking at it and working through it, because there are two quotes, like the first movement and the opening of the Dies Irae are almost exactly the same. But that is it. There's just a few measures of it, and then everything else is completely different. But it sounds just like any classical piece that you can imagine. So, I mean, outside of those three international composers, most of the music that I then talk about or have listed are composers who were born in the States. One of my favorite living composers is Adolphus Hailstork. And he has a ton of choral music in this style. At NCCO, we heard his Shout for Joy, that massive anthem, which is another big festival piece that if you got a big celebration, that's the piece to do, because he wrote it for the 150th anniversary of a church in his area in Virginia. And one of my teachers actually conducted that from the organ, conducted the premiere of that piece from the organ. It still blows my mind. And it actually was recently orchestrated. A university commissioned him to create an orchestration, since it was originally for mixed choir, organ, brass, and timpani. But it's got some other things in there. I kind of prefer the original version because it's just got a little bit more bump to it. Strings, just no matter what you do with the strings, it's not going to be the same as a fanfare with some trumpets and trombones. I'm sorry. There's no comparison. Not that anyone is better than the other. It's right. It just is a fact.
Yeah.
So, I mean, those would be some. And then I do like to talk about some of the younger composers, you know, under 50 or under 40. Let's see, in the past 2 years, I've programmed two pieces by Carlos Simon.
Okay.
His setting, Sanctus, is one that I've not had a single choir not fall in love with that piece immediately.
Okay.
Even there was a high school here that sang for our state music ed conference. And she was like, out of all the pieces that we did, this was the one that they loved right away. And I was like, that's why I recommended it to you, because I knew that the kids would like it. And then we did a really hard piece of his called A Light, which is, like I said, really hard. Yeah, that took some work.
He has a degree.
Yeah.
He can write for high school. He can write for super challenging college.
Definitely. And I'm saying, if you want to get on his schedule for commissions, you got to get on it like now, because he is commissioned up the wazoo. Like, he ended up leaving his university where he was teaching at the end of the fall semester, just because he was like, he doesn't have enough time to balance teaching and all of the commissions. And I mean, I don't blame him. We need more music. So, hey, you got that. Another person is Chris Harris. So Chris Harris is at Arkansas Tech University, and he had a piece done with Texas Allstate a few years ago, I Am Loved. But I actually was introduced to him through his music first, when my best friend got a piece from another friend who's in Houston, who knew Chris and was like, you got to check out this piece, Bring Me All Your Dreams. I heard his choir dude was like, oh my God, this is great. I programmed it when I guest conducted another group, and I was just like, oh, this is wonderful. So I've got to see how to get that piece premiered now that I think, published. I got to talk to some people because I really, it's simple and it's just luscious and good. Let's
is
see.
Is that one of the pieces he did at NCCO? That said, they performed at NCCO, right? His choir?
Yes, but they did, I think there was all Essenvaults.
Oh, that's right. But he did talk when I met him afterwards about his links. There was something said, maybe you told me about his links in Houston.
We've talked about a lot of things since we met in November.
We sure do. I love it. Yeah. Okay, so Chris Terrace is another one. Who else?
Brittany Boykin. She is in Atlanta. She teaches, one of the schools where she teaches is Spelman College. She's assistant conductor of the Spelman College Glee Club, and she has a website with quite a bit of music. And because she's an alumna of Spelman College, which is an all-women's historically Black college in Atlanta, she obviously has a way with writing for mm-hmm. soprano alto voices.
Factoid about Spelman, we just ran a marathon that ran through Spelman. It was beautiful.
Oh yeah.
It was absolutely beautiful.
I've only been able to get there once. Yeah, I've been to Morehouse a couple times, but then just never had the time to, like after I was done in Morehouse, we went somewhere else. But I did have mm-hmm. one opportunity to like walk through Spelman's campus. And yeah, it's, the AUC is just a gorgeous area. It's just—
Yes, really, they ran us through all of that. That part of the marathon was easy.
Yeah. Easy. So yeah, those are three amongst, I mean, there's
so many. There's so many. Oh,
and I mean, like I recently did a piece by Jarrell Gray for our holiday concert, and he sent me a couple other pieces. He just won an art song competition this weekend for one of the songs from a song cycle he wrote in memory of his, I believe, mother and grandmother. And so he has a ton of beautiful music as well. I mean, Brandon Spencer, Colin Led. I mean, I could talk about quite—
The list goes on. So for someone listening right now that's really having their eyes open, like my eyes were open. There is beautiful music written by African-American composers that aren't just spirituals.
Right.
And aren't just, like, there's a whole nother world to dive into. Like you said, with Carlos, he sounds very similar to Mozart. And what an opportunity to really bridge that gap and really build that equality and awareness.
Yeah, so I think it's very important. I thought about maybe having, when I was thinking about my dissertation, I was thinking maybe I could talk about like comparing some, let's say like choral suites, to see if maybe there were some larger works that compare by Black composers that compared to larger works by whiter composers. And then I was just like, well, maybe, I don't know if I necessarily want to do the comparison to make it seem like whiteness is the threshold or the benchmark, and you have to reach this level in order to be considered good. But I think Eric Nelson did a program completely unrelated to this topic, but he did two songs where he paired songs where it was two different settings of the same text.
Ooh.
Like, and so you could kind of do something in that realm, but just mixing in the Black composers with anyone else. And so, I mean, there are some people who say that we need to celebrate the Black composers, and others that say, well, you don't need to separate them. You don't need to mention race because that, you know, further divides. And I understand the rationale for both. I think that right now, because people just don't know that it exists, you need to let them know. And there are two ways to let them know. You show them and you tell them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, pre-concert talks are great. I think that it's even more important, and I haven't done this recently, but I've been thinking more and more about how I can make this happen. Turning our academic concerts, so the concerts that we do at institutions, if we are going to really be educators, our job is not just to educate our students by giving them the history. Our job is also to educate our audiences. Because this is complete conjecture. I have not done a study, even informal. I'm just throwing this out there. I would say, based on what I do, I don't read all the program notes. And a
confessions.
I mean, that's just being real. And I'm so sorry to the musicologists who spend so much time on those. I mean, there are people who benefit from them, but sometimes I show up 2 minutes before the concert, the lights are dim the whole time, so I can't read it. So if you know that a lot of some people won't be there in enough time to read all the program notes, if you have them, how are you going to teach your audience about these things? One of the best concerts I had when I taught in Pennsylvania was when we were in Delaware. It was the education ministry of this church who sponsored our concert. And so I then said, well, if it's the education ministry, I should go ahead and educate. And so for almost every piece, we talked about what they were going to hear. And some of the pieces that we did were pieces that they were probably familiar with. So I didn't really have to talk that much about that piece or that style. But I don't think anybody in the audience was familiar with Mozart's Vespers, De Confessore. And we did two movements of that. So somebody like my parents who love music and who love me more than they love music, so they're gonna show up to a concert. But if they hear Laudate puri dominum, da 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 da, like it's, yeah, they're just gonna be bouncing and be like, okay, that was cute. Like at my freshman recital when I did Non Pedrai Farfalone Camerota, like they were like, were you singing about spaghetti and lasagna? Like that's what they're like, it sounds good, right, but they don't know what's going on. So I then explain to the audience in just a few minutes, this is a fugue. So you're going to hear Laudate puri dominum. And then Mozart, being the great composer that he is and fitting in with this genre, he then takes that and then he puts it in a new key. Tenors, y'all go ahead and sing it. Okay, so you're going to hear that, but then it's going to happen some other ways. He's going to flip it upside down. Sopranos and tenors sing that. Now he's going to put them together. So y'all do it. And by explaining that and then some of the other songs, I had so many audience members come up who then said, oh my God, that concert was so much better because I now knew what was happening. I could understand it so much more. Why I haven't done that more since, I don't know why. I need to like actually do it. Yeah. So now that I'm talking more about it, this is also going to be like the accountability. So maybe some other folks.
Oh, I got you. Yeah. I'll hold you to it.
I'm good. I love it.
You might follow the recipes, but I'm really good at the calendaring.
I love it. Okay. That's good. So yeah, I mean, when it then comes to this music, because it doesn't sound like the Black music that we're used to hearing, it's then important for us to say, okay, yeah, you may know the name Brahms, and you know, you probably know the name Mozart, or you've heard Hallelujah Chorus, so you might know Handel. But you may not know Edward Marketson. Mm-hmm. So you then say, okay, well, this is a guy who was born in the West Indies, and then he emigrated to New York, started the Schubert Music Society up there, and then this is his music, and I haven't seen a single piece of his that had any of these idiomatic influences at all. You know, you can then talk about Ulysses K and how he, you know, studied all over the place, and you may have some folks in the audience who are familiar with ACDA or a part of it, and you can say, well, he was the first composer that was commissioned by ACDA for their first national conference after they broke away from or separated from MENC. You know, you can make those connections with people. And I mean, Ulysses K is also one of my favorite composers now. I've done four of his pieces so far and they are ballers. My students love singing them and it's just great. So,
but you know your singers, you know your audience, and you're widening your view of who to look for. So yeah. You've talked us through the old dead guys, no offense to them. But yeah. There's some old dead guys.
Yeah.
You've talked us through some of the current 30 and 40 year olds. Mm-hmm. You've given us examples. I feel like just sitting here listening, I've taken a million notes because you're giving actual repertoire that has been successful for you. But then most importantly, once you've discovered this, taking it and sharing it and educating your audiences and your communities. I think that's such a big thing right now.
Definitely, because especially in this age where we understand that there are people who view, there are still people who view people based on appearances. They have a bias because of appearance, whether it's skin color, whether it's because of mannerisms, speech patterns, clothing and attire, like all those kinds of things. They then have a bias and say, this person is going to be this way because they do X, Y, or Z. This then can help you start the conversation. And this has only been a recent thing that I've been thinking about, as in like this calendar year. When you start thinking about the biases that you may have with music, you can then start thinking about the biases that you have outside. So I then start thinking about, well, how do I view this group of white men who are all bald, who have some tattoos, they have a lot of leather, and they're on motorcycles? Am I assuming that because I am in a particular part of the country that they're going to feel a certain type of way about me? Now, statistically speaking, that might be true, but who am I then doing a disservice to by automatically going towards the negative and that kind of stuff? And so, I mean, you do have to take this all with some nuance, but yes, you need to have those conversations. You need to just be thinking about how you are thinking about other people. So it's beyond music. I mean, we talk about how music is about community. This is another aspect of that communal experience.
Yeah. What a great way to end. I feel motivated to go dive into all. I was trying not to click any of the IMSLP links while we were talking. My ADD was kicking in. I'm like, I got to turn that screen off. I'm going to start clicking all the links.
Yeah, I've gone down many rabbit holes looking at that stuff. And so I think
I'm
maybe
looking forward to going down that rabbit hole.
Yeah, it's fun. And then we can just do it on FaceTime or Zoom and then just be like, oh my God, have you found this piece? I'm like, no, I haven't. And then that, and speaking of, and so if anybody does go to the website and you look at the database, and I did, right now, it just has four lists. There's one full list and then you'll see unaccompanied, accompanied, and choral orchestral. You will see, I did not put difficulties on there because I understand that difficulties and the types of voices that it's appropriate for really are unique for individuals. Mm-hmm. Because if I say a piece is good for high school, that might be because my high school had, I don't know, three voice teachers and my students were even able to take, you know, private lessons. So what's appropriate for high school for me is not appropriate for someone who has most students who did not have music in elementary or middle school. This is their first time. So it's important to then, as you go through, you look at a piece or two, and then you can kind of see where that composer sits. So Adolphus Hailstork, most of his music was written for the advanced high school and then for collegiate and professional ensembles, whereas Victor Johnson and Rollo Dilworth and Andre Thomas, they gear more towards certain audiences, certain choirs and that kind of stuff in their abilities. It's about, you just go through and look. But at the bottom of that, if you're like, oh, you don't have this person on there, you don't have this piece, I've got a form. So you can submit that to me. I can add it into the website because, I mean, this is not about me. Mm-hmm. This is about this music that people just need to know about. And I just want to keep adding more and more and more to the list because, you know, it only takes one person to click on it to then perform it at this high school concert. And then somebody goes to see their niece perform, and then they're like, oh, well, that piece will actually work well when I do this festival. And then somebody visits that festival, and they're like, oh, well, I'm going to be doing this Allstate in 2 years, and I think that piece would actually work for this. And then, you know, I mean, then because it's done in Allstate, then all these other choirs then start. You just never know what one click can do. Oh, it just takes one
click. That's gold. You never know. One click. Speaking of which, you should totally share this podcast episode because you never know what one click will do.
That is great.
I so enjoy talking to you. Obviously, we've been talking a lot and I love it. I'm so glad we finally recorded an episode.
Yeah, this is so good. This is good. Thank you. I appreciate
it. Thank you.
All right. Are you excited? Do you have a new composer that you are going to go explore? Are you potentially going to dig deeper into a composer you already know? Whatever you're taking away from this episode, thank you so much for listening today. It is an honor to be able to bring this information to you through this platform. If you want to hear more, we have a big announcement coming next week, but you can check it out on the Patreon page, Music Ed Matters, at patreon.com. But I'm just so thankful that you're here. I hope that you realize by simply sharing this episode or using some music that you heard in this episode that you are part of the change we want to see in this world. So thank you for being a part of the Music Ed Matters listener family. And whatever you're doing today, it matters. You matter. And I'll see you next time on Music Matters.